relates to boards and commissions, and it's pretty clear on its face. With leave of the body, I'd like to read from both the Constitution and the statutes.
There is objection to reading because I did.
Well, then I shall paraphrase.
Thank you, Representative Barnes.
Which I know that the majority or the minority leader very clearly knows that I'm quite capable of doing. First of all, the Constitution, under the executive, is to refer to the legislative branch the appointments to boards and commissions. And further, under Section 3905.080, procedures for appointments, it clearly says that those nominations sent forth by any sitting governor shall, pending confirmation or rejection of appointment by the legislature, persons so appointed shall exercise the function and have the powers and be charged with the duties prescribed by law. Those persons that are sitting in these seats that are before us today for confirmation were appointed by a previous governor. As was stated earlier, there is no way that the governor that now exists can withdraw those names until after we have acted. After we have acted, he has the authority, those that serve at his pleasure, to remove them. But he does not have the authority to withdraw names of a previous governor, because the government does not stop when we change chief executives. And the actions of these appointees have been summarily taking place since the time they were appointed. To say this governor could withdraw them and reach inside the legislative body and take them out would be to say that the governor has power over the legislative branch of government. I submit to you he does not. I submit to you that the Constitution and the statutes are clear on their face. And I know that the minority leader from the Senate, who is smiling broadly, knows that that is the case. Thank you, Madam President.
Representative Porter.
Has Mason's Manual 102 been invoked?
I was just getting to that. Representative Porter, it has not yet. Is there further debate? Representative Cabina, you have spoken previously on this question. Do you need to clarify what you said previously?
No, ma'am. I think what I want to do is clarify something that you said.
I'm sorry, you don't have the right to the floor for that.
Can I say anything?
No.
So you're invoking I can't speak again is what you're saying?
I am. Representative Davies.
Madam Speaker, I would like to respond to the statement that was made.
Point of order.
Representative Cabina, would you
I'd just like to know why I'm singled out, Madam President.
Because I hadn't gotten to Representative Davies yet.
Even though he's been up at least as many times as I have been. Something. You know, if you got to do it, you got to be fair all the way down, Madam President.
Representative Davies, if you are rising to...
No, he started speaking. Let him speak now.
Representative Cabina, you're out of order. Representative Davies, if you want to clear up a matter of fact or explain some material part of your previous speech, otherwise.
I want to clear up a fact of a previous speaker. I believe that the statement that was made was an error, and it's supported by this document that you distributed, or Mr. Kelly, or Senator Kelly distributed.
Well, Representative Davies, if you're rising, to what?
I'm rising to clarify and correct a statement that was made by the previous speaker who was in order.
Is it a matter of fact?
Yes, I believe so.
Representative Davies, go ahead, but stay in order.
Yes, ma'am. The speaker before me from Anchorage said that the sitting governor cannot reach in and pull a nomination out from the legislature. But I believe that that statement is an error, and I would like to read one sentence.
Representative Davis, you may not read. You can paraphrase.
All right. I will paraphrase. The memo that was distributed to us by Senator Kelly, dated February 3rd, 1995, whose subject was status of appointments whose names have not been presented to the legislature, has 3 points in it, in the second paragraph. And those are the ways in which a nominee, an interim nominee, can be removed. And the first one was that they would be rejected by the legislature on a vote not to confirm. And the second would be that they're rejected by the legislature by its failure to vote. And the third would be removed from office according to the process of law that governs that particular committee. And, Madam President, I would submit that the governor, exercising his ability to withdraw somebody who serves at his pleasure, is in accord with the law that governs that specific committee. And so that is indeed a legitimate way, according to this document, that a person could have been removed and not, in fact, be before us right now. And so I think, based on that, the previous speaker from Anchorage was in error.
Is there further debate?
And the question is, shall the body adopt, shall the joint session adopt the post-session appointments? Madam Speaker, would you please poll the House?
The question being, shall the House adopt the post-session appointments? Would all members please proceed to vote? The clerk, please void the roll.
No. Senator Kelly will stand at ease.
All right.
Joint session will come back to order. We do have a motion before the body. I will restate the motion, and then the Speaker will poll the House first. The motion is to adopt the post-session appointments that are on the sheet before you that were made after session 1994, before we went into session 1995. Madam Speaker, would you please poll the House?
The House question is, shall the House adopt the post-session appointments? Will members please proceed to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
23 yeas, 2 nays.
Would the secretary please tally the Senate?
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Helfard?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman? Senator Kelly? Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Lincoln?
Yes.
Senator Miller?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
Yay.
Senator Rigger?
Yes.
Senator Salo? Senator Sharp?
Yes.
Senator Taylor?
Yes.
Senator Torgerson?
Yes.
Senator Jara? Senator Adams, excuse. Senator Donnelly? Senator Duncan? Senator Ellis? Senator Frank?
Yes.
Senator Pierce?
Yes.
12 yeas.
Has any member failed to vote? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? The secretary would please lock the roll and read the final tally and the joint tally.
12 yeas for a total of 35 yeas and 2 nays.
And so the post-session appointments have been adopted by joint session by a vote of 35 yeas. I'm sorry, Madam Secretary.
35 yeas, 2 nays.
35 yeas and 2 nays. Senator Halford.
I move and ask unanimous consent. The joint session stands adjourned.
Joint session is adjourned.
The House, please.
Violated.
Speaker, I just wanted to comment also. It's nice to see you back in charge of this gallery, because now that we can do the people's work, now that those extremely partisan other members of the body have left us alone.
Mr. Minority Leader, I think you're out of order. All right, when we left, when we took on Eddie's, we were under debate on House Joint Resolution number 29. If there's no further debate.
Oh,
we are still under the call of the House. We will take debate, but we'll have to wait until the members are all present before we vote. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It's been such a long time ago that I don't know if I'll remember all the remarks that I wanted to make, but I'm going to give it a try anyway. For some time, one of my bigger concerns on the national level has been with the federal deficit. I've spoken to high schools all over my district, and I always ask them the question, who's paying for the level of government we have now? And they always say, well, the federal government or taxes. And I said, no, you're paying for it. Because we've been writing checks and taking out credit that our children and our children's children, perhaps, are going to have to end up paying for. And that's something that I think is unacceptable. It's no different than a family who gets caught in a credit card financing where they buy everything on credit and the bills eventually come due. And when the bills come due, they have to do without some things or lose things, perhaps even through bankruptcy, just so that they can meet their obligations that they have obligated themselves to. One of the bigger problems that we have in the nation and even in this state at times, one of the things that I campaigned on when I first ran for the legislature was that there's entirely too much parochialism. People are more worried only about their own districts and forget to look at the bigger picture of things. And I think that that happens on the national level also. Certainly, Alaska has the potential for being hurt by any amendment that would require a balanced budget. There's no doubt that Alaska could be impacted because we get significant revenues from the federal government. On the other hand, how much will we be impacted when the bills finally come due and we have to face very draconian cuts in order to meet our obligations? There was also some discussion about national defense, and I believe that in the case of national defense and emergencies related to war, that the U.S. Congress and the Senate have the ability to work together to act quickly when necessary if the exemptions that are provided for in the balanced budget amendment are not adequate. And I think that in that case, we put our country ahead of partisan issues. I also spent a lot of time when I was a young boy reading about U.S. history, the history of our country, our forefathers, all of the Civil War heroes and the Revolutionary War heroes. And one of the things that I often think of when we talk about change and being afraid of change and the uncertainty that we might face is if our forefathers had had those same thoughts and the same approach, we would not be a country today, because certainly there was a lot of unrest and lack of knowledge about what the future might hold. But sometimes the risks have to be taken for the overall good. And in this case, I think that the biggest danger that we have facing this country is the growing deficit. And it's not a problem that you can blame on Democrats or Republicans. I think that both are responsible for the spending that has gone on at the national level. So I think that the biggest danger that we face now is from the enemy within, and we're our own worst enemy with respect to the continuing loading on to our federal deficit. And that while this may not be the answer. It may not. It may cause some turmoil. On the other hand, the status quo is not working, and it is incumbent upon the leadership of the country at this time to act in the best interest of the country, and I think that is to pass a balanced budget amendment. I support the resolution.
Further debate? So, without further debate, are you ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt committee substitute House Joint Resolution 29, Finance, amended House? Will members please proceed to vote? The clerk please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
31 yeas, 7 nays.
And so, committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 29, Finance, amended House, has passed. Would the clerk please read the next item on the calendar?
House Concurrent Resolution Number 8 by Representatives B. Davis, Robinson, Elton, Parnell, Navarre, Grusendorf, Davies, and Nicolai designated the month of March as Women's History Month. A zero fiscal note was published. I have no amendments, Madam Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Concurrent Resolution Number 8 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage. Wrong motion. Brief at ease. If I may withdraw my previous motion, I move that House Concurrent Resolution be adopted by the House.
Is there a debate? Representative Davis?
Madam Speaker, thank you very much. My debate will be very short. At least we have something before us I think would be non-controversial, and I would like for the members of this House to join with me in voting for this resolution. We are indeed making history, even right here in our state of Alaska and in the legislature, having two women representing us on each side of the House. There's lots of things that women have yet to do, and I do believe that having the month of March is an appropriate thing for the state to join in, since most states throughout the nation already has a Women in History recognition. And so, therefore, I would encourage all of you to vote for the resolution. Thank you.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt HCR number 8? Will members please proceed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
36 yeas, 2 nays.
And so, HCR 8 has passed the House. Would the clerk please read the next item on the calendar? Representative Martin?
An inquiry, please. I was asked, and I'm not sure where the note comes from, but is there a Men's History Month?
I wrote the book.
The House, please come back to order. Representative Martin, I'll be glad to work with you on that later. Will the clerk please read the next item on the agenda?
We have citations on the calendar.
Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that citations on today's calendar be adopted.
Without objection, the citations are adopted. We're under unfinished business, and I do have one piece of unfinished business. Earlier, the clerk read the committee substitute House Joint Resolution Number 5, Judiciary. It has picked up a fiscal note, and I am doing an additional referral on that to Finance. Further unfinished business, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from the call of the House on the following dates. Representative Gail Phillips and Representative John Davies from 2:20 p.m. Plain Time Friday, February 17th until 10:06 p.m. Plain Time Saturday, February 18th. Representative Ivan from 6:55 p.m. Plain Time Wednesday, February 22nd until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Olgan from 2:20 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 16th until 6:16 p.m. Plain Time Saturday, February 18th. Representative Mackey from 9 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Friday, February 17th until 8 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 20th. Representative Green, Representative Veazey, Representative Cabina, and Representative Sanders from 6 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Masick from 9:05 a.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Olgan from 6:55 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 9:29 a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 27th. Representative Willis and Representative Bundy from 5:30 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 9 o'clock p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Toohey and Representative Roeckberg from 6:55 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 8:48 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Brown from 6:30 a.m. Plain Time Friday, February 24th until 8:48 a.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Parnell from 6:30 a.m. Plain Time Friday, February 24th until 9:29 a.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative James from 6:30 a.m. Plain Time Friday, February 24th until 7:15 p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 26th. Representative Coring from 6:55 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 9:29 a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 27th. Representative Porter from 6:55 p.m. Plain Time Thursday, February 23rd until 9:29 p.m. Plain Time Monday, February 27th. Representative Terrio from 6 o'clock p.m. Plain Time Sunday, February 19th until 9 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 20th. Madam Speaker, I also move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Bundy be allowed to amend his excused absence to reflect a return at 9 o'clock p.m. Plain Time Monday, February 20th, or in lieu of 9 o'clock a.m. Plain Time Monday, February 20th, to 10 a.m. Plain Time Tuesday, February 21st.
There'll be nobody left to object because everybody will be gone.
I'll be here.
Representative Willis?
Madam Speaker, I move notice of reconsideration on my vote on House Joint Resolution 29.
Representative Willis, if you could hold that just for a moment, please. I need to just clarify there were no objections to those absences. Thank you. Those are people, the members that were read off will be excused as read. Representative Willis, reconsideration of your vote on?
House Resolution number 29.
On House Resolution number 29. House Joint Resolution number 29. Is there objection to taking up reconsideration? Oh, no, you're just offering reconsideration.
No, I'm serving notice.
Notice. Sorry. Thank you. Further unfinished business. Do we have any committee announcements?
We didn't have any.
Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Judiciary meeting today was canceled due to lack of interest. And since everybody's going to be gone, the Judiciary Committee meeting scheduled for this Friday is also canceled.
Further committee announcements? Representative Martin?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. For the few who are remaining, there will be a very important meeting tomorrow from 3 to 5 with legislative budget and audit. We will talk about the ADA and specifically the Mike Ayer proposal. Thank you.
Further committee announcements? Any general announcements? Representative Ivan?
The committee will meet tomorrow at 1 o'clock to hear House Bill 80 and House Bill 154.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Majority Caucus scheduled for 4:30 p.m. today is canceled. There will be a Majority Caucus at 3 o'clock p.m. Monday, February 20th.
3 o'clock. Further announcements? Representative Williams?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. There will be a House Resources Committee held in Ketchikan on Saturday at 9 a.m., February 18th.
Further announcements? We have special orders. Representative Nicolai.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Permission to speak on subsistence?
Without objection, you have the floor.
Last week, the member from District 18 rose under special orders to speak on subsistence, and I was not here, so I'd like to comment on that now. And then also, I also did some research on what was said on this floor. And the definition of subsistence given at that time was offensive to the rural people of Alaska, for whom subsistence is more than fish or meat on their tables. It is their lifestyle. The statistics were given last week about the number of hunting licenses sold. Using hunting licenses as a measure of how important subsistence is to rural Alaska troubles me greatly. First, the premise that subsistence is mostly hunting is not really true. Subsistence harvest in rural Alaska comes mostly from fishing. As shown by studies by the Department of Fish and Game, 60% of the subsistence harvest in rural Alaska is fish. Game makes up only 20%. Second, that the number of hunting and fishing licenses is an objective measure of hunting and fishing in Alaskan communities. Subsistence hunting and fishing in rural Alaska is typically a family activity rather than an individual activity. The number of hunting licenses sold does not accurately reflect the number of families and family members who participate in hunting or processing wild food for their tables. In addition, a fishing license is not required for subsistence fishing, only for sport fishing. So you can't really measure the subsistence lifestyle on fishing licenses either. The objective measures of subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska comes from our own Department of Fish and Game studies, both for urban and rural Alaska. The studies that they use a variety of scientific methods for obtaining and estimating the harvest and use of fish and wildlife by urban and rural Alaskans, sport fishers, hunters, trappers, and subsistence hunters and fishers. They don't use the number of fish hunting licenses for their studies. They have other ways of determining those measures. So in general, these studies show that rural areas of the state from southeast Alaska to the North Slope, an average of 375 pounds of wild food per person per year is harvested. 60% of this wild food is fish. Third, that an estimated number of registered voters is a good indicator of the number of adults in rural communities who should purchase a hunting license. But I'd like to, for the record, state that we don't have vendors in rural Alaska in most communities, and that oftentimes one or two adults in a hunting party or hunting group needs to have a license. The state law requires only the person who shoots the animal is to have a license. I'd like to add that in rural Alaska, hunting licenses, again, can't be purchased because these people don't have access to those offices because they're not there. And in fact, for five of the 13 communities mentioned by the person from District 18, five of those 13 communities have no licensed vendors at all, according to the Department of Revenue. And in communities where there is no licensed vendors, hunters have to travel to another community by boat, airplane, snow machine, or car in order to purchase the license from a vendor. Otherwise, they have to do the necessary paperwork by calling or writing to the Department of Revenue in Juneau or a Fish and Game office, either in Fairbanks or Anchorage, or wait for an application to arrive in the mail. This process can easily take at least 2 weeks before this person can purchase a license. And I'd also like to include that not everybody has phones in rural Alaska. Their access to any of those offices are very limited because of having no phones, and it's very difficult for a lot of people to write down for applications. And in a lot of cases, they don't even know where to write to. And lastly, Madam Speaker, concerning the argument that with a rural priority in our Constitution, there will still be the heavy hand of the federal government in Alaska, I think that when the state had a rural priority for subsistence use up until 1989, the state submitted an annual report to Congress, an audit report to the federal government, accounting for expenditures of funds received under ANILCA. These funds were received by the state for research and management programs for implementing the ANILCA relative to subsistence use of fish and game by rural residents. That was the extent of federal oversight. It was only after the rural priority was removed from state law that we began to experience the federal involvement in the management of our fish and game here in Alaska. And so I just wanted to clear that for the record. Thank you.
Representative Bundy?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As I prefaced my remarks previously on this subject, leave the body to speak on the same subject.
Without objection, you have the floor.
And as I prefaced my remarks, much has been said, and I think much left to be said still on this subject. Previous speaker certainly makes my point that there is access to hunting license if people choose to go to the bother, even though it might be involved the mail and 2 weeks. None of these communities do lack mail service, I would point out. But rather than belabor the issue here, I would encourage all members to take a look at an article in the in a back section of the Anchorage Daily News in today's issue for a more thorough discussion of the subsistence issue and how complex the current attempt at resolution is.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I request permission of the body to speak on departures from the past.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I was quite depressed and disturbed by what happened today. I feel real badly about the relationships we've had in the past, working together, and to see what happened today. And just to make clear for the record, obviously confirmations have been controversial in the past. They'll continue to be. But what disturbs me the most is the process. I've been around for off and on for, in one form or another, for 10 years. I've never seen, and I don't believe there's ever been a joint session call with no advance notice, no official advance notice. I've never seen, I don't believe there's been a joint session where some members of a body knew of it in advance and others didn't. And, Madam Speaker, I've never seen a joint session where the people we voted on were not those that were submitted by the sitting governor. I think these departures from the past are extremely worrisome. I was very disturbed by things today, and I am saddened by the direction we're taking. Thank you.
Further special orders? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand adjourned until 10 o'clock a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, February 16th.
We are standing adjourned for a technical session tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Thank you. Just technical.